Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on? It's your boy Bach, Everything DMV Radio. We are live right now with the one and only Hangman Brooks. We got a great show coming up for y'all tonight. We look forward to getting y'all hip and understood on what's going on out here. So I just want to thank you for tuning in. We got a lot of great information that we're going to give you. So just pay attention. Stay aware. That's what we do. What's happening? How you doing today, sir?
What's up?
Hey,
how you doing?
So we live. Great. We live right now. I got.
Wait a minute, Brock. Are we live and living color? Is it color black and white?
Hey, we live and living color.
you got to change the hours. Hey, I can understand that because that's a lot of running around to do, man.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to make it happen, man, and just making the call come forward. I'm closer to home, but, you know, just I get off right at, I got like 30 minutes to get to the house. So I got this on and popping for us. We live right now, Everything DMV Radio. Once I get fully into the house and I can get everything else going. But, yeah, man, what's been going on? How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. You know, I'm still waiting for my cousin's funeral. Kenny Newsom, my cousin, you know, I say, a.k.a. my brother, seems like his funeral won't be the next weekend. That's the word I got. And I know it's a lot of people been asking about it. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a big funeral, you know. He's well known in D.C., especially in Northwest. And then my man, Kayvon Cunningham, he got shot down on Benning Road and Texas Avenue in a gas station. And his father is one of my boys, Guy Young from Lincoln Heights. And his grandfather is named Guy Young from Lincoln Heights. You know, that's the third generation. And I coached him at Friendship. He was a hell of a linebacker at Friendship. And he left.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what school he went to after that. But he got that shot. And I think there was some retaliation behind that, the word I got. But I don't know for sure. But his funeral is supposed to be Tuesday at Steve Young's church, and that should be a large turnout with Northeast and Southeast because Guy and his father had a lot of respect.
Yeah, so, I've been to that guy's church one time.
He buried a lot of the young guys, right? But
yeah.
I'd like to welcome everybody to the show. I want to welcome everybody to the show. Gonna be a big show tonight, Bob. You know, show.
It's gonna be an amazing show tonight.
And you know, it's on time with the violence in D.C. and stuff happening. And the thing about it is, you got to bring some people on that know what the situation is. It's easy to bring somebody on to sit around and talk about. We need to do this, and we need to do that, and we need to do this, and what the parents need to do in this. But the bottom line is, the only people that know the answer is people that have been in the trenches, people have been in the streets, guys have been in the streets, guys that have committed crimes and done time, and street hustlers, and big time guys in the neighborhood. Those
right.
are the guys that can tell you what's going on. And then you got people, you know, with my job when I was with the Youth Gang Task Force, with Bridget Miller, you know, we squashed a lot of beefs. You know, and we resolve a lot of issues, and then we got a lot of ink from the newspaper and the radio and TV. But the thing about it is, we squashed over maybe 400 or 500 beefs in D.C.
Wow.
Now, the thing about it is, when you squash a beef and nobody gets killed, people overlook it and take it for granted. Well, nobody got killed. You know, we prevented a lot of stuff. But you know what? the most amazing thing, I sat down with city officials. I got accolades from the mayor. You know, Mayor Williams was there. He was in there. I got accolades from the superintendent. But everybody congratulated us, but nobody asked us, how did you solve the beef?
Right.
That's unbelievable. You know, you got a method where you can stop people from beefing, but nobody asks you, how did you do it? All they want to do is give you a award and say congratulations. Yeah, I think about that all the time. Man, what do you think about that?
That's crazy.
You probably got a solution in a way to a lot of problems, but nobody is ever give you a award.
Wow. So that's a great question that I have for you is how do you do it? How does it happen?
Well, first of all, it's a process. It's a lot of different ways you can do it. But first of all, if you in the street and the young people don't know you, the guys in the neighborhoods that are committing crime, you know, it's only a few guys in the street that are really killing people. It's not like everybody's shooting everybody. But if you don't know the main people in the streets, how you gonna resolve a partner? I mean, how are you gonna resolve a situation? Because you can't go up in the neighborhood and talk to them. They don't know you. You just can't walk up in the neighborhood and say, hey, I want to talk to you. What you want to talk to me for? You might go up there and get shot yourself. So the first thing you got to do is you got to know these guys. Now, how do you get to know them? Well, I've been in this town for a long time. So all over the city, I know a lot of them, brothers, mothers, fathers, grandfathers, generations, right?
Right.
So it's easy for me. Even if they don't know me, I say, well, I know so-and-so. They go, oh, okay. And they go check and say, yeah, he all right?
Uh-huh.
That's one thing. Another thing is I hear guys all the time saying stuff like, why all the killing? Well, we just need jobs. We need jobs. That's the biggest excuse I've ever heard of. You know, and one thing about youngins, when they get on camera, they'll say stuff, and adults will believe everything they say. Well,
uh-huh.
You're killing people because you don't have a job. Think about that. No, the job has nothing to do with it. It's somebody disrespected you, somebody embarrassed you, somebody messed with your girl was cheating, you mugging on me, you know, you try to carry me at the club. You know, that has nothing to do with a job.
No.
Because see, and if you want a job, you got to get a GED. Because, you know, the graduation rate in D.C. public schools, I don't know what it is now. One time it was like 30%.
Wow.
So you can't get a job unless you go back and get a GED and then try to get yourself a trade. Because working at McDonald's is not going to provide you with a family and a house and a car.
Right.
You know? So the first thing you got to do is you got to go back and get some kind of GED or whatever. But you take a guy on the street that's 18 years old, 17 years old, he hustling. You walk up to him and just give him a job making $60,000 a year. He 19 years old, just give him a job. And all he got to do is just come to work and sit out, $60,000 a year. That same night, he goes to a club with his girlfriend. This is just hypothetical. It's not true. The same night, he goes to a club with his girlfriend, and somebody calls his girlfriend a B, disrespect her. He's going to forget all about that job because now the peer pressure on. He called your girl all that name. You ain't going to handle your business. Do you think he's going to think about that job he just got? No.
Not at all.
But if he, I always say if you can get to be 23, 24, 25, you start thinking a little different. Now, you see guys, a family, a job, a nice car, they think twice about doing stuff. Because as you get older, you realize if you can survive the streets, you realize that you can, that you just can't do the same things, you know. A man 19 don't think the same way a man 25. Now, I'm not saying all guys 25, because there's some killers out there that are 25. But the older you get, if you can get a certain age, maturity, then you can say, okay, I understand what the game is, right?
Right.
Now, a lot of people say they're building jails for us. Well, stop going to jail.
Right.
You know, all the police is just, well, stop going to jail. I mean,
right.
Stop. You know people at the go-go don't like you. You know you might have to carry that pistol. You know you got problems. So why you go around? Well, I got to go because I don't want nobody to think I'm a punk. I ain't going to stay in the house. You know what I told my granddaughter one time? If somebody told me at my age, if somebody told me, Brooks, when you come out this building, you and I are going to fight. I said, I'd run out the back door. Why would you run out the back door? Because I don't take orders from them. They don't tell me what to do. You come out the front door, so I'm going to come out the front door and do what they say. I'm going to go out the back door. Well, people say you're a coward. Who cares?
Right.
Who cares? I'm trying to avoid a fight because guess what? If I get in a fight, two things going to happen. He going to hurt me or kill me. I'm going to hurt him. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to either be dead or in jail. So I can't win. But everybody will say, Brooks, man, he stood up to that dude, man. Man, Brooks got a lot of heart, man. You see, he carried that dude. He punished that dude. Man, that dude pulled out a gun and Brooks killed him. I'd be in jail and everybody come on, I'm a hero. 5 years from now, they forget all about me. They said, what happened to Brooks? I don't know. What happened to Brooks? They gone on with their family. So, you know, the first thing they got to do, they got to get rid of that mentality. But you know what? A lot of times we don't have people at home because the families at home go to school, teacher gets smile with you, curse the teacher out. Somebody hits you, you hit them back. You know, they promote by tell them don't like the police. They give them all negative stuff. So when they go out on the street, what they do?
Exactly, you know, that.
They're gonna carry out what they learn from home. You know what I always say about some of them guys is some of them troublemakers. First of all, I always say this about a troublemaker. The best way to get to know a troublemaker is when he's not in trouble. The second thing is knock on the door and see who opened the door, and then you can see why he's always in trouble.
Oh, man. I know that's right. Well, we're going to take this quick break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Hey, everybody stay tuned. We got a big show tonight.
nervous about getting an assessment? Don't be. We want to put your mind at ease right now and tell you exactly what you can expect. You should dress comfortably and ready to work out. You'll learn some of the do's and don'ts of weight and cardio training and go over your personal goals to create a plan for your workouts. From there, you'll go through a quick warm-up and then do five simple tests to help create a baseline for your fitness level. These tests help determine your cardio and endurance level, strength level,
Welcome back. How you doing, Brooks?
I'm doing great, baby. I'm doing great. Bob, you the man. Hey, isn't it stinking like Popeye chicken? What I always say, the grease don't kill you, the chicken will. Great
you
show tonight.
Right.
We got a great show tonight. Hey let me tell you something, Bob. We've had a lot of guests on the show, but we're going to hear some stuff tonight that a lot of people just don't hear about. This is going to be a big one. I know you know, and I know, because we both, you know, we from the streets. You know, we from D.C. We know what's going on, but a lot of people don't. They got an idea, but we're going to get both sides of the coin tonight. We'll get the one side and the other side. And it's going to be a great show. And be a lot of knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. So we got your girl coming on right now.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Hello.
There she is. Welcome, Miss Bridget Miller, to Let's Talk Football with the Hangman and Bach, everything DMV Radio. Tell me about this young lady, Brooks.
Let me say this. First of all, I worked with her for a whole bunch of years. And, you know, when they started the Youth Gang Task Force, D.C. Public Schools, you know, it was shaky at first. And then they asked me to take over. And she was the assistant. And it wasn't no thing where I'm in charge, you do what I say. We work together. And some of the things that we accomplished together is amazing. I mean, she's fearless. I mean, she goes in the streets. She don't need a Bible. She don't need a whole bunch of people walking with her. She go get the job done. And we had a motto with the Youth Gang Task Force. When we go take care of a situation, don't come back and say, there's nothing we can do. It's too far gone. It's too many shootings, too many murders. And we establish a bond that we can go into a mediation together. We don't even have to say, don't say this and don't say that. We can look at each other and we can see which way it's going and we can handle it. I have a lot of respect for her. I worked for her a lot of years, right? Good family lady. You know, her youngest daughter is my godchild. And we go way back. And I'm telling you, hey, if you want somebody to have your back in the streets, she's the one to have it. And she's going to tell you about some of the things that a lot of people don't know. We've done so many things, squashing beefs. We were dealing with transgender people 20 years ago. Now everybody's bringing it to the forefront. And, and she'll tell you about some of the beefs and some of the things that we went through. But Miller, Bridget Miller, thank you for coming on the show. Happy to have you on the show. Give us some background on your
show.
Where you're from and whatever.
Hey, Cheap Shot.
There it is.
There it is.
Hey,
yeah, I really
I would never come from somebody else, but I ain't know it's going to come from her.
Well, that's the truth. Truth is the light. Yeah, I was born in Richmond, Virginia, and relocated to the DMV. Back in March 84. So I've been dealing with the mean streets of D.C. probably for about maybe 35, 36 years.
So when you came here, I know you worked school security, and then we formed that Youth Gang Task Force. And you know what? You know, it's a few things I'm going to ask you. You know, I'm going to ask you about the problems we had and about solutions. Mm-hmm. See, everybody sit around tables talking about, we could do this and we could do that. But a lot of people don't really know how to solve the problem. The first thing they say is, oh, just get them a job. You can say, oh, just get them a job. It's more to it than that. But let's talk about some of the beefs, some of the things that you squashed. I'm talking about some of the hardcore beefs where it was shootings and murders. And at one time, tell us about how many funerals you went to in the course of a year.
In the course of a year, we probably went to about maybe 200 or more funerals. In 15 years, we went to 1,575 funerals. And how do
Whoa.
I know that? I have all the obituaries to approve. To prove it, I mean, it's nothing that was told to us. We were there. We attended every
wow.
funeral pretty much because these were our kids. And each had
one was
on. Going, I mean,
I did.
We were the ones who had to go out in the streets to make sure that these things didn't come back into the schools the next day. So you're talking about killers. They're talking about killing each other's families, their mothers, you know, some of the things that's going on today. But these guys, the guys that we dealt with would actually carry it out.
Wow. Well, you know, like I said, you know, Bridget went to more funerals than I did. And I never look at bodies, but Bridget, she took it to heart because every time one of those youngers got killed or was shot or hurt, she went to the hospital, she cried about it. She really took it to heart. And we had a six-man team, and we've squashed beasts in the streets and every D.C. public school, every high school, Wilson included, and every junior high school. And some of the beefs that we squashed, the average person, principals, superintendents that said, we don't know how you did it.
Right.
But I always used to say, well, if I tell you how to do it, if I tell you how we squashed that beef, I had to kill you. I'm just joking, right? But Bridget,
yeah.
talk about some of the beefs and some of the things that you accomplished.
I think it had gotten so bad. We had a beef between Trinidad and Paradise community because somebody, one of the guys from the community stabbed another guy the night before. And it had gotten back to the school, and the teachers were afraid to come to school. They were calling out. The principal talking about locking the school down. Nobody wanted us to come in to handle this problem because they thought that we couldn't. And then it was said if we came in and we didn't handle it, we'd be fired. So what happened, one of the former superintendents and the assistant superintendents actually threatened the principal to let us come in and, you know, do what we had to do. So actually we had to go around to one of the communities and pick up all the guys, Brooks and I in my vehicle, and then we had some other people to pick up the guys from the other community. And we probably had about maybe 30 guys in this room, and all they talked about was killing each other and killing each other's families. And it got so bad to one of our investigators had to walk up on the table. We locked everybody out the room, and we had somebody guarding the door because the principal came in. Actually, we put him out. And we had to get to the bottom of what was going on, you know, to really squash the beef because people failed to realize that kids have to go to school together to learn, to get an education. That's what they're supposed to do. But parents always want to be involved, and this person wants to be involved. And when you get a whole bunch of people involved, it solves nothing because the parents take over the meeting, and then the kids don't talk. Without them in our mediation, the kids tell us everything. I mean, things that they never thought about telling their parents. So, you know, once you hear both sides, you let them go back and forth. You don't stop them because once they go back and forth, you find out a lot. You find out what's going on. And 9 times out of 10, these things start out as one-on-one fights. But because a person got their behind whipped, they'll go back to the group and say, yeah, I was jumped by 2 or 3 people. And then a lot of times that's what starts these beefs. But with this, I mean, we stayed in for hours. There's no limit on how long you stay in a mediation. You have to stay there for as long as it takes. And I'm not promising you anything, and you're going to do what you have to do anyway. I'm not promising you a job. I'm not promising to take you to dinner. That's just not going to happen because you're a kid and you have to learn the rules and you have to go to school together.
Right.
So with that, I mean, thank God we've done over 800 mediations without any retaliation.
Wow.
That's amazing because, I mean, you know, got to have some skill, but also, you know, people talk about the Lord and, hey, man, we got to have some blessing too. You know,
yeah.
We got to, we had some skill, but you got to have a little luck. We're at the right place at the right time.
Right.
But, you know, the reason why we got so much play is because how did we squash all these beefs? The crime in the city went down 25%.
Yeah.
How did we squash all these beefs and no retaliation? Bridget, you can talk about that.
Well, what we did, I mean,
we didn't have that.
We don't know everybody, but we know somebody who knows somebody. A lot of times when we go into these mediations, I mean, everybody is all tensed up. Never have we had anybody to walk out. They always listen to us, but sometimes, I mean, you have to go in and break the ice. And if a kid, a lot of times you have to come down to a kid's level so they'll understand. Again, I mean, a lot of them didn't know us, but they knew and they had heard of our job that we do, or they had some family members that we have dealt with in the past. And, I mean, just to go into these mediations, it's not easy. It's hard. Sometimes Brooks will go in clowning, talking about, yeah, look at Ms. Miller. Ms. Miller got a big butt, this, and or Ms. Miller did this, or she did that. You have to do what you can to break the ice. You know, I'll say, yeah, well, I'll punch you in your face or something like that, or I'll knock your teeth out and see how that feels in front of all the kids. So once they're comfortable, then that's when you have to go straight in.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a beef, and we resolved that. But talk about some of the other beef. And talk about some of the girls. I mean,
we've been
in the middle of a fight. We were briefly in the middle of a, they had a fight at Johnson, two neighbor women, aunts, everybody jumping out and fighting. Everybody was fighting. Her and I was on the steps. I said, Bridget, let's go down. She said, wait. So I don't say, why are we waiting? Because I know she got a plan. And they were fighting, jumped out of cars. We walked in the middle of the street with about 30 people battling by ourselves. Police didn't come out there, the principal, and we stopped it.
Well, they stayed on the
steps. That was Bridget's girls. A lot of them Bridget's girls. Talk about that.
Yeah, the captain of the police department and then the captain, one of the captains from the district, they were there. So, like I said, we had our gang unit there. We were standing back. We talking about hundreds of people in the street. You're talking about the probably about maybe 30 girls on one side and maybe 40 on the other side. Cars start to pull up. Grandmothers jumping out with canes. Grandmothers jumping out with walkers. What they going to do to the kids and everything. So Brooks was, Richard, come on, we got to go down there. At the same time, I'm at the top of the step. I'm just looking, watching who has what in their hands. So I like, Brooks, not right now. Not right now. He said, come on, Bridget, we got to go down there. We got to get into this. I said, Brooks, wait a minute. Because I saw one of my girls pass a knife off to the other girl. When I saw that, then that's when we started down there. And I talked, and I talked to her, and I talked to the aunts, and I talked to the grandmother with the walker. She said, Bridget, she said, there's nothing that you can do right now. I got to whip some butt. I got to whip some butt. But she didn't say butt. I said, well, no, you can't do that. I said, you see the police up there? I said, somebody's going to get locked up. And I said, your girls, I said, they don't need records because these records would definitely follow them. Nah, we got to do something. We got to do something. I said, well, let me handle it. I said, let us handle it. That's why we're here. Let us take the fall. Because anything that comes to us, I said, we can handle it because I don't want y'all in the situation. So we got down there. Actually, we got the knife from one of the girls. We brought them together. We didn't bring them together right then and there because we talked to both sides. We brought them together later due to mediation. They squashed the beef, and, that was taken care of. And that was far southeast. That was far southeast. Oh, well, for Douglas Road. And pretty much after we did that, I mean, it was calm. The more beef that we squashed and the more kids heard about it, the more, like, they were on our side. When we came into the buildings, you know, they wanted to be a part of us. They wanted to be a part of that group. So whenever something went on, you know, they would call us. So at Anacostia Senior High School, we had been dealing with a lot of things between two groups. One day we got called over there, and I was so mad because I'm like, I don't come out twice. When I do my mediation one time, that's it. When I come back, heads roll. So when we got into the building, I started. I had the mug on my face, and I went off. And they were like, no, Miss Bridget. We didn't do anything. I said, so why are you all in this room? Somebody did something. I said, I told you all, if I come back, it's going to be a problem. No, Miss Bridget, something was getting ready to happen, so we brought ourselves in the room. So in all those years, this was the first time that we'd ever had. I mean, these mean mugging dudes, these dudes just out there at night, they don't care. They brought themselves to the table to squash the beef to take care of before we got there because they didn't want nothing, you know, no bad news getting back to us because they didn't want to get transferred to the west of the park.
Yeah, good old Road, Minnesota,
ever.
I think it was.
Yeah, good old Minnesota. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not easy, but, I mean, if you have the love for kids, it's not for the money. If you have the love for kids and you're trying to save these kids, And, you know, it's easy, and it's still easy. It's just that people don't want to take the time because if it's not right there, and right there, that face or whatnot, they'll say, well, hey, they'll get over it, or somebody will deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. But that's not right. You don't do that. Regardless, I won't want my kids going through that. So
yeah,
any time if I see something going on, I'm going to intervene. I don't care if it's 1,000 people out there. I'm going to intervene. The thing is, when you get called 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning to go to a crime scene and you see your kids out there on the ground, that's not a nice look. I can't take nobody up Lincoln Heights with me that time of morning. I got to look over my back, and then I got to look, you know, to see what's going on. And I've had 6'6" guys talking about, come on, Bridget, come on, I need you to come go do a home visit with me. What do I look like going to do a home visit with you? That's your area. Those are your kids you should have been built a rapport with. If I got to go do your home visit, that means I need your pay, and I need your position also. You don't need to be there. Simple as that. Because I don't have time, again, to go out there and try to deal with a situation knowing that
right.
I don't have anybody watching my back. I have to watch my own back. It just don't bounce that way.
No. And a lot of times, a lot of times, people don't realize most of our mediations, a lot of times I was by myself and she was by herself. It wasn't always her and I together or Mike.
Right.
I used to say, one beef, one gang task force, take care of it. That
yeah.
Every now and then we'd have a whole team there every now and then. But you could not
yeah.
come back in the building and say, I just couldn't do anything about it. Then, because we got rid of several people to say they just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And it is the biggest thing, Bob, before you, the biggest thing is, how do you handle it? It's the language in there. A lot of adults don't have a clue what the kids are saying, you know. Okay, Bob.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to say, you know, anybody who have any questions out there who's listening, you can press 1 on your dial pad, and I'll definitely get you in to answer all your questions. This is Everything DMV Radio. We got one caller right here. Welcome to Let's Talk Football with the Hangman and Box. Thanks for calling in and listening. May we have your question?
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, yes,
hi. My name is Yvonne Clayton, and I'm a retired Washington D.C. teacher.
Hey, Miss Clayton.
I just want to really commend you and Brooks because when I was teaching at Charles R. Drew, you guys really stood behind me, and the skills that I learned from the mediation, I have taken those skills with me, and they have really, really done great for me. As a retired teacher and still teaching, those skills for mediation, the younger teachers that they have now, they haven't been taught that, and
exactly.
So they don't know how to talk. They don't know how to talk to the kids. And
right.
Like I was
right.
talking to Brooks the other day, and I was telling him about I broke up two fights, two young girls that had been friends since third grade. I sit both of those young girls down. The principal asked me, "What did I say to them?" I said, "I told them it's nothing but friendship and love." You got to put God in your life. You got to understand who you are as a person. Know that
right.
you got to think. If you got a real friend, your friend is going to be there for you no matter what. And I want to, I want to really thank you guys because it really has helped me. And it's helping
You're
me
welcome.
Now with my grandson who's 14 years old.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. I appreciate
wow.
that.
And if that was
yeah,
one person I would have to take in the streets, it would be Clayton because she would rumble.
Yeah.
So you know
would.
It. Those
are the
good
old yeah. Days. Oh, yeah.
Speak wise.
Thank you, guys. And I'm still
okay.
listening.
Okay.
Okay.
Bridget, tell some of the listeners about the language. Because you know what? When I was growing up, I could talk one way in the streets. And when I go home, I have talked another way. But they only know one way to talk. And when you ask them what's going on and they start throwing that slang at you, you better not ask them, what are you talking about? I don't understand. If you
oh, yeah.
say that, you're through. And I always say this, too. How do we get over? It's like Satan. You got to mix lies with the truth. It's a con
yeah.
game. I would
yeah.
do anything I can to get you to stop beefing. A lot of times, it might be a lie. Or it might be
mm-hmm.
a fake move where I got the police going to do this, the police going to do that. But Bridget, talk about that.
The language.
Yeah,
yeah, and they might come in there and talk, well, yeah, I was out there in the street last night, man, and I had that fofo, and I put it to that joint's head, and it was just like that. So if I didn't know, I'll go and I'm like, well, what are you talking about? You know, and they'll look at you. They'll look at you. I mean, what they're saying is that they was out in the street and they had a beef with somebody and they put that 44, which is a 44, it's a weapon, a gun, they put it to their head and then the dude cooperated. So,
well,
you know, they talk about busting off.
Flipping. Yeah.
Busting off, which means, you know, to shoot or kill. Then they were talking about, like, dogs, that's my man, which that's supposed to be a friend. And you always hear that, yeah, that's my man's in them, that's my man's in them. You know, or they always talking about, yeah, we was out in the streets, we was off that, which means they were getting high. You know, it's slang like that that we had to learn. And being around them, you'll learn it. You definitely learn it. Because D.C. is so unique and so different from anywhere else. Because they have their own language. They have their own way of dressing. You know, they have their own way of doing things.
Talk about the graffiti. One time, we were the only ones in D.C. that read graffiti. We taught the police officers. We taught public defender's office. They thought graffiti was just some junk on the wall. And Bridget really actually solved a murder at one time because of graffiti. Tell us about the graffiti.
You have to learn how to read it. A lot of times you see the R.I.P., which everybody knows that's rest in peace, or R.I.E.P., rest in eternal peace. But a lot of times this tagging and this graffiti tells you that a crime has been committed or is getting ready to be committed. It'll tell you who has done the killing or who's getting ready to kill because, you know, they put it up there and, you know, in so many words, they're putting the whole neighborhood out there. They're putting who's hiding the neighborhood. Then you have the other graffiti, or which they do the murals, which now you'll see the tagging on the truck, and always ask if you see a truck ride by and it has tagging on it or graffiti on it, what does it mean or what does it stand for? Well, it represents that the artist tagged it because he wants to see his business out there. You know, that's his advertisement. That's his way of getting it out there.
And Ms. Miller,
yes, Chief.
Tell the listeners about all the people that we've trained in.
Oh, wow.
In not so much mediation, we've trained some mediation, but in understanding the way the crews operate in D.C.
Oh, wow. We've trained the public defender's office, school systems, you know, the DMV. We've trained probation officers, judges. Not too many that we haven't trained.
And
whenever
one time,
they will call it the media when something goes on, you know. The media will call us, yeah, well, do you all know this is going on? But y'all need to get over there and see what's going on. I mean, how many times has the media contacted somebody to let them know what was going on?
Yeah, you know, hear that. But I remember, I forgot the name, a group where all the law enforcement officers in Maryland, D.C., Virginia, as far as Pennsylvania, you should meet once a month. And we were the only ones that wasn't law enforcement. And the first time we went in there, they did not want us in there. A lot of whites
that's
in there,
margin.
Too. Tell us about
that.
That
was the margin meetings. That's when all the jurisdictions get together from Pennsylvania, New York. They all come together. And they talk about all the problems that was plaguing their areas, which were the gang problems, because that's what they had in common. So we were asked to go to this to these meetings by one of the, he was a former D.C. Gang person. He went on to the FBI. So we're sitting up in these meetings, and everybody looking around at us like, you know, who are they? We introduce ourselves. They turn their nose up at us because we wasn't law enforcement. We were non-law enforcement, but we were dealing with their problems, the same problems that they were dealing with, even some of the same guys, you know, who moved from city to city, state to state. We were dealing with these folks. So after the sergeant broke it down to them what we did and, you know, how we did it and how we had contacts and whatnot, and it was no problem. We were welcome.
Yeah, we started giving them information about stuff they didn't know about. And see, the thing about it is, it's a fly, fine line, Bob, between what to say and what not to say, because you don't want to be labeled as a snitch and tell the police everything. We did, and Chief Ramsey did the biggest honor to us, told us, they told all the police officers, do not ask him about murders.
Right, right.
Because we don't run to the police and tell them about this murder, that murder. Our job is, if it's a murder, we try to prevent it from escalating. Talk about that for
me. And actually, the police chief and the officers, just like the media, they would come to us every time something went down. Look, this is what's going down. and they may or may not be, you know, kids that you all deal with. Y'all go handle, because we're not trying to lock anybody up. You all can squash these beefs fine. I mean, you know, that's work they have to do, because if they go in right. and they arrest them, by the time they get back to the city, these kids are back out on the street. And that's why a lot of, you know, officers were frustrated. So, you know, we come in again, we grab these kids, you know, do what we got to do. And with my thing, sometimes I would get mad with Brooks because, you know, Brooks was like, come on, Bridget, we got to do this. And I'm like, it's not joke time today. Because, see, you have to deal with girls on a different level than you do guys. Now, with the guys, I mean, I can do any mediation with anybody. But with the girls, it's a little bit, it's a little bit more difficult because of the animosity that they hold, you know. And I always tell them, we'll be in here for 4 or 5 hours. Y'all not leaving out here until we come to an agreement. And then I put them on contract. But what's this contract for? This contract states that as long as you are in D.C. public schools to the time that you graduate, if your nose run wrong, you're out of here. Simple as that. And if you try to go to another state or you try to go somewhere else to go to school, I'm going to block it. Well, we can go to PG. Well, if you think you can go to PG, go ahead. I'll be right there, and I'll block it. Perfect example, I had a problem on the West Coast. And actually, she was one of my girls from here. Her father was MPD. Mother was MPD, and they moved out to L.A. They became LAPD. And she was out there, I mean, acting a fool, cutting up, hanging with the blood, I mean, just doing everything. He told her, he said, him and his wife said, well, I'm going to call Miss Bridget. I know who to call. She told him, go ahead, call her. She's not coming way out here. What's she coming out here for? They called me 2 days after that. Guess what? I was on the West Coast. And I was standing in the high school by her classroom door. And she was being real cute and real smart with the teacher. So they had already told the teacher what the deal was. So I'm just listening to her. She said, you can call who you want. Miss Bridget ain't coming out here. She don't know nothing. When she said that, I popped up in the classroom. I said, what did you say? She said, oh, snap. She said, where'd you come from? I said, baby, you don't know where I'm going to be. I said, I told you, I will follow. If they call, I will come. I don't care where you are. If that means keeping you alive, I said, because now you're on the other side of the world. And I said, here is no game. What you did back in D.C., right. it wasn't a game, but it's not like on the West Coast. So you play games out here, you're going to get caught up. You're going to get killed. And I said, your mother and father don't need to go through that. So I went out there, and, you know, I stayed out there that week, and I was just like funk on a skunk. Everywhere she turned, I was there. Because like I told her, I said, baby, I got connections out here, too. Just like you hang with those folks, I know those folks, too. So right. that day, I mean, she graduated. She finished college. She called me, like, twice a week. That's what she do, but that's what we do. You have to stay on.
That's dedication.
Can't just close the door.
Yeah. And what a lot of people don't realize is it was 6 of us, and guess what? It wasn't a thing where girls do girls and boys do boys. Hey, I've done a lot of girl mediation by myself. They didn't say, well, we don't want Mr. Brooks or we don't want Ms. Miller because they're girls. Hey, I go in there and deal with the girls too. So it didn't make a difference. We had problems with the gays. You know, a lot of gays are hanging with girls. We had those type of problems. You might want to say something about that, Ms. Miller.
We had a school. It was so bad at one of the high schools until – females couldn't even go into the bathroom because they were so afraid of being initiated and that these, you know, gay girls were going to take advantage of them. And we had already told the school system what it was coming down to, you know. But, again, nobody wanted to listen because it wasn't going on at that time. So we got called to the school because, you know, the gay girls went in there. They blocked the girls in the bathroom. They wouldn't let them out. They were trying to initiate them and whatnot. So we went in and we had to take care of that. Once that was taken care of, it got downtown. I mean, then, of course, everybody wanted to open the eyes then. But everything that we do, it was about prevention, intervention, and suppression of all the gang activities that took place in the city. And, again, if they get back to that, we wouldn't have the problems that we have today. We got the problems that we're having now because unless I come up with the idea or, you know, somebody comes up with an idea, it doesn't matter. They don't want to see nobody out there helping these kids, you know, and saving these kids' lives. If they didn't do it, it doesn't matter. And that's what I'm tired of. Like, as of today, I've been to 2,725 funerals with all the obituaries to show, with the exception of 10. And out of all of these funerals that I've gone to, those 10 were maybe they got hit by a drunk driver, natural causes, something to that extent. You know, not anything that was gang related.
That's crazy.
Let me say this about the police department. See, everybody hates the police. They shoot up. Let me tell you something. The reason why a lot of people get upset with me because I'm not anti-police, because a lot of police officers in this town have came to us and say, we don't want to hurt these youngins. We don't want to lock them up. See what you can do. Now,
right. That's
prevention right there. And we train a lot of them. We work with a lot of them. They didn't ask us about, do you know about this murder, that murder? They put us on the spot. I mean, so I respect them. Now, D.C. is a little different from a lot of other places, right? But the guys I work with in D.C., you know, the police officers, man, I don't think I disliked any of them. The commanders at 70, 60, wherever, hey, they love us. When we come in the building and they're in a meeting, they say, hey, hold the meeting. Bring us right in, right? We also, Bridget,
yeah.
You might want to talk about, you know, Lewis. I had Lewis Cardona on last week. He dealt with the Hispanic crews. But
mm-hmm.
We were the first blacks in this city to do a mediation with Hispanics.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me
that
ask you
that
real quick. Ms. Miller, this
mm-hmm.
is what I want to know is regarding the prevention methods to keep youth out of trouble. What are the, you know, common mistakes that the leaders and the mentors make?
Well, the mistakes that they make is going in there acting like they're in charge of everything. That's one thing. I mean, you know, if they do get to talk to these kids, they go and act like they know everything. That's number one. Instead of letting the kids talk to find out what the problem is, getting to the core of it, kid might try to, you know, explain what's going on, and they'll stop them. And then the kid will get upset and say, well, you asked us and we're trying to tell you. But that's one of the biggest problems right there. They don't listen. Let these kids, I mean, express to you what's going on and what's needed and what can make things better. But they don't do that. They go in there and they want to run the meeting. They want to do this and do that. And it's sad.
Yeah, we couldn't have adults. We have mediation is two groups in a third party medium, right? A conference is where you have everybody in there. You cannot do a mediation with parents, teachers, police officers, because when you go in there, they're going to talk about the things they did the night before when they were shooting at each other. Second of all, the adults are going to hold the meeting. They're going to stand up and talk about, back when we was growing up, back in the day, they don't want to hear that crap. They don't want to hear about Brooks played football and Brooks did this or Miss Miller, no martial arts. They don't want to hear that kind of stuff.
Right.
And see, you know, I got an ego like anybody else, but I don't go in there talking about football, I did this.
Right.
They don't want to hear that because guess what? They got problems. They don't need to hear about
right.
me playing football. That's the last thing they need to hear. But a lot of people go in there with the idea, yeah, I did this, and I did that, and I did
mm-hmm.
this. And see, you can't deal with it that way.
No, you can't.
Yeah. And Tell Brock and the listeners about some of the beefs we had in the neighborhoods.
Oh, wow. Lincoln Heights.
I had Lincoln Heights in 58.
Clay Terrace, 58, 57, Mayfair Paradise, Kenilworth, 1st and O, 5th and O. Then we went up there to where the Hispanics was, Uptown, 14th and Columbia, 14th and Park.
Yeah.
18th Street. There's no one part of the city that we did not have a beef in. Back then, we probably had about 200 crews back then, which the police department said, well, we only have like 40. But no, we had about 200, and all of those, we dealt with those 200.
Hands I think on. When we wrote that book, that opened eyes out. We wrote a book, Shadows of the U.S. Capitol.
It did, and that's why.
And everybody went crazy over that book because
we wrote the
about, you know, carjacking, how to ambush, what to get you killed, what to say, what not to say. It's an information book.
The book was written because there were so many homicides going on in the city per day that it wasn't talked about. Only the highlighted ones, big ones, were talked about, but these little ones was like swept under the rug. So I told Brooks, I said, you know what? I said, we out here in the streets every day. every night. I said, we could do a book, an information book. I said, because D.C., actually, it's a political city. And there are shadows behind the U.S. Capitol that are just not talked about. I said, things are, you know, probably about every 25 minutes, it was a homicide in D.C. that wasn't talked about. So
wow.
Then that's when we came up with the idea to write the book. Well, they laughed at me. Oh, you're not writing. I said, well, look, I'm out here. I can do it. I said, we out here every day. Why not? Why not let the citizens in the District of Columbia know what's going on, from the language to the carjacking to how many crews there are to what's the definition of a crew or gang, which is two or more people, you know, involved in a criminal act. You consider a crew or gang, but now you consider it a terrorist act also. So that's when we came up with the idea for the book, which nobody, again, you know, nobody didn't believe it, and they didn't want to see it, but, I mean, it happened. It happened. And it was nothing fabricated. This was hands-on things that we dealt with every day that we saw that we put in this book.
And I remember we wrote that book. We had the news channel standing in line to get the interview. But the biggest thing about that book is, not only we opened people's eyes up in the city about what's going on, but the thing about it is, there's so many people that were in the dark. And I remember when the police officers, you know, police department said they got 40 crews. We said it's 200. They said, no, it's 40. And we sit down and we get a training with the police officers and we start telling them stuff. And then guess what? A lot of people get jealous. They think they knew everything. They didn't treat us like that.
No.
They loved us. You know, they had a gang unit. They had a gang unit for the Metropolitan Police, and we were training them.
Right.
And they were street officers. They wasn't like officers. They were from D.C., and they knew the streets.
Yeah, born and bred. I mean, yeah. I've had guys from all over this book. I've had, I think he played Steve Sitsu or Steve somebody that played for the Denver Broncos. He bought 100 books because of the fact he, you know, heard about what was going on in D.C., and he wanted to teach his football team to show them that this is what goes on here in the nation's capital.
Yeah. And talk about some of the girl beefs we had, some of the girl gangs. Luscious Honey, the Top Cat. I mean,
the first one, the biggest one was the Luscious Honey and the Top Cat Bees. I don't know if I can say the word or not. But we had them over in far southeast. That was the first biggest one that we had.
Stomp
at
Down Honey.
In high school, we had the Stomp Down Honey, the Luscious Honey, the Pipehead Bees. Oh, wow, they give themselves these names. I mean, Top Cat Bees, Nothing But Ass Honeys. These are names that they pull out the sky. Yeah. They pull them out. But we had these Knockout Honeys, Most Wanted Honeys, which was the biggest crew that we ever dealt with, because they probably had about 100 females citywide.
Wow.
That was the first time that girls had went from far southeast to upper northwest to recruit girls. And the Knockout Honeys, they were from northwest. They stayed in northwest. But this right here, this was a real big crew. And come to find out, the leader of the Most Wanted Honeys, her father was a pretty big guy in the streets back in the day. And she was trying to live off of his reputation. And you know, we just stayed on them and stayed on them and stayed on. I mean, I see these girls today, and it's so funny because a couple of them are police officers. You know,
they'll tell me, you know, we thank you.
If I hadn't listened to you, I wouldn't be here today. And guess what I do? I said, what do you do? Because I thought these chicks probably would have been dead by now. She said, I'm a police officer. I'm like, yeah? She said, yeah, I work at such and such district, and I've been there so many years. And I'm like, wow. She said, what you and your partner told us, said at the time, y'all thought we didn't listen, but say it paid off because now I have a daughter in school, and the same thing you all got on us about, I'm getting on her about it. So I'm like, okay.
And Mark, you know, this is a hell of a thing right here. Out of all the years we've been in the street, we've never been threatened. We've never been jumped on. Nobody's never cursed us out. That's amazing. I mean, we dealt with some of the worst hardcore kids you can find. And I change my attitude. I don't call them at-risk kids. I say parents at risk.
Yes, that's it.
They cause the problem, a lot of the situation they come from. But I remember a time with Lincoln Heights in 58, they fighting at Winston, and I said, I can't let this go down because it's going to be a lot of bodies. Because 58 at the time were loaded, locked and loaded. They had a lot of weapons, Lincoln Heights. I went to 6B, got up, went downstairs, talked to both groups, went upstairs, talked to Sergeant Danelli. I love him. Great guy. Sergeant Danelli. I went to the captain. I say, command, I say, look, can we reduce some of these charges? They had a lot of charges. He said, reduce. I said, just do me a favor. Reduce it to disorderly conduct. Okay. They didn't challenge me and say, Brooks, nah, man. They said, okay. I went to the principal. I went them out of the school. I said, look, if you put them out, you still got some guys from 5th Day from Lincoln Heights there. They still going to get into it, and they still going to come back up to the school. So that was a mediation that we brought them into Woodson, and we went in a room, and we sat down. It was, must have been 100 people in there.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. We want to know what's going on. I said, wait a minute. I'm the one who got these guys out of jail. Who are y'all talking to? No, we want to know. I said, okay, y'all sit right there. What we do? We took them guys right out the room and went upstairs, took care of it. They went home, and Bridget told me the next week at homecoming, Lincoln Heights and 58 were deep in the stands together, and they've been friends ever since.
Ever since?
Oh, my.
You know, it had gotten to the point where we had big beef going on, and we had even been threatened to be fired if we didn't get it together. And that was one of them, Brooks. But again, you know, we did what we had to do, brought them together, and they were the best of friends. They started playing basketball after the fact. You know, it came a time when we do mediation with the guys. You know, they talk about killing each other's mothers and I'm going to do this to your grandmother and whatnot. We get up, leave out the room, go out and discuss some things, Brooks and I. Leave them too. They still in there going back and forth at it. But guess what? When we left that room, nobody got out their seats. Nobody fought. Nobody
did
anything.
They know better than that.
You know, by the time we came back in there, they had already squashed it. Well, we done. We squashed it. And, of course, I'm going to drill them. How do I know you squashing? I don't believe you squashing. We're going to stand here for another hour or two. Nah, Miss Bridget, for real. You know, we realized that it was a mistake, and now we don't have time for that. You know, there's money out here to be made. And we out here beefing, and we're not going to make no money. I said, okay,
right.
Well, the only way I'll believe that, sign you John Hancock on the dotted line. Well, why have you got to do that? Because I don't trust you. You might tell me anything.
That's right.
So I'll use that, you know.
But, you know what, Bob, guess what the biggest thing is?
Was
parents
that?
Used to come up. We have a mediation. The parents would come up there, but they couldn't come in the room, right? So we go and resolve the mediation. Then we let the parents in the room.
Before they came in the room, you know what I would tell the kids? I would say, look, now we've squashed the beef, right? Yes. I said, okay, your parents are out there, and your parents are coming in here, and they might start this thing over. I said, so if you want to get out this room, what you better do when they come in here? I said, you better laugh, and I said, you better tell your parents it's all done, because if not, y'all going to be in here some more. So the parents will come in, and they will look. You sure everything is all right? Yeah, Mom, we squashed it. We good. Look, we dapping. We doing this. It's all good. They took care of it. Kids will walk out, leave their parents in the room. They go back to class. A lot of times the kids didn't want to go to class. They wanted to stay in there with us.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Because, you know, once we squashed the beef, it was joke time for me.
Yeah, and that would make me mad. It would be joke time. He was always on joke time when I'm on a serious tip because, like I said, I had to get my point across to these females, not only to the females, to the guys, too. And, you know, it's a time and place for everything. I'm not taking you to McDonald's. We're not doing any of that, and you're going to do what you have to do, too. What you're supposed to do to keep peace within this school, because you all need that education. Right now, education, back then they were saying education is free. One day you're going to have to start paying. And can't any of you afford to pay for an education? So you get it while you can, and you make the best of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people say, wait a minute. You and Brooks be together. Like, are y'all going together?
Out
of your mind. That's the biggest misconception ever.
We were together 24/7, day and night. I mean, we were together like peas in the pod. If you didn't see one, you saw the other. And if they didn't see, you know, they were always asking, where's Brooks or where's Bridget? But that's how it was. We had to keep that bond, you know, in order to get the job done. Even now, I mean, once we get together still, I mean, we knew what the kids was going to say. Or what they were going to do before they even did it. Or we knew what
That's
one
right.
of us was going to do or say before we did it. Because all we had to do was, like, look at each other. And we knew the body language, where we were going with it.
Yeah.
They will say,
absolutely.
Hey, she look like she me. Hey, she me. Look at, she got a mug on her face. Why she got that mug on her? Yeah, I got a mug on my face because I'm in here with you. You had a mug on your face the other day when you was out there trying to be cute in the streets. So, yeah, I got a mean mug. I got a mug on my face. It's what you all look like. But, dang, Miss Miller, what you going to do to us? I said, what y'all going to do to me? But it's more of us. It's only one of you, and it's about 10 of us in here. What you going to do? I said, well, sweetheart, I'll
say
it like this.
Don't say
Let
that.
Your conscience be your guide. I'm here to help you, not hurt you. But if you all feel that you're going to jump out there and do something to me, let it be known that somebody's going to get hurt real bad. They're probably you because you got all the mouth. I'm going to break her ribs, and I'm going to hold this one because she's going to have to contact your parents to come up here with the black dress. I'm not taking no nothing off of you. I'm here to let y'all know. I'm here to help you, not hurt you. If you don't want me helping you, then you can just get up and walk out of this room right now. I'm here to tell you. So somebody said,
yeah.
Oh, I know who that is. That's the gang lady. Oh, yeah, her daughter, because she got three daughters. This has nothing to do with my three daughters. This has something to do with me being alone. And, you know, the 15 of you in here. So if you decide you want to do something, go ahead and do it. I'm not going to say that you're not, but it's going to be consequences. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I don't have no more problems.
You know, Ms. Miller, glad to have you on the show. And, you know, next we got my man Fox on there, Jonathan Fox, with the Lincoln Heights Mob.
Thank you.
I said, Jonathan, you want me to say Lincoln Heights Boys or Lincoln Heights Mob? I said, Lincoln Heights Mob.
Yeah,
the general.
Mob.
So,
the president.
Yeah, I appreciate having you on the show. A lot of knowledge, you know. It was fun working with you. You know, one thing about you, I don't know any other woman that knew the streets as well as you did. So I appreciate everything you've done.
No problem. We get ready to do it again real soon, real soon. It's not as long as it has been. We'll be back together, D&B Connection.
Yeah, hope so. Okay, thank
you. Okay. No problem.
So, hey, anything you want to tell Fox?
Oh, wow. I know he's grown a lot.
Yeah.
He's always saying, I'm grown, but he's really grown now. But, you know, I'm just glad that he'll be able to make it to the show. And, I mean, he's going to enlighten everybody on things that he's seen. And
yeah,
that's
boy.
A blessing right there. It's a blessing
good
when
man.
You can always come back and you can tell what you've been through.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Mel. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay. Goodbye.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I'm trying to get your
deep,
boy
huh?
on. Yeah, that is deep, though.
Yeah. We got a general coming on, Jonathan Fox.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on right now.
Okay.
I just sent him a couple lines. But, yeah, she, man, y'all going through it for making things happen.
Yeah. Man, but it wasn't as hard as people think it is. It's a natural thing. You got to have a natural feel for it. If you're scared of kids or you're scared of young people, then it's not going to work. And you got to know what buttons to push, what not to push. You can't go in there and take a side either. That's the worst thing you can do.
Right.
You know, you stay neutral. Yeah.
I think I got the right number for them, but I don't know. We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah, take a break.
A great way to commit to a workout schedule is getting a gym buddy. If you're responsible for someone other than yourself, both of you will be held accountable. Plus, it's a lot safer when there's someone to spot you when it's time to lift heavier weights and challenge your muscles. And you'll even have someone to motivate you on those lazy days.
Don't be a show-off, or you may not show up. Thank you.
At the tone, please record.
Yes. Hello. Yes.
Yeah, Brooks.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, you hear me?
How you doing? How you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
All right, look, we had a big mix-up, man. We were trying to call you, but, I sometimes we call, man. Sometimes the cables get crossed up. But I'm glad to have you on the show, man. Glad to have you on the show. And let me say a few words about this guy, everybody. This is my man, Fox. Love him. From Lincoln Heights. I remember when he was a youngin', his brothers and everybody up there. Always had a lot of respect for him. I mean, he did his thing, but I still loved him. And right now, he's trying to do a lot. He's doing his music. You know, he's not going in that route trying to get in trouble or staying out of trouble. You know, he let them youngers know that he's not to be played with. Always respect him. That whole crew up there is always like my second home, Nat and Clay Terrace, Simple City, and 58.
Yeah.
But welcome to the show, man. And Bach said he knows you, too.
That.
Yeah, Bach knows you, too, man, because he's in the music. So he knows you. But Fox, man, and Bridget.
Yeah.
Just came on the show. Bridget said, yeah, keep doing what you're doing, man. Sorry for the mix-up. But, hey, okay, it's your show.
It's definitely an honor being, you know, amongst y'all. How y'all doing?
Doing
pretty
great,
good,
man.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I ran into you at the fire station, and then you came down there to the turntables one night.
Yeah. That was a while ago, like last year.
Yeah. That was a minute ago. You got that one song. I ain't heard a lot of your music, but I did hear that one song, Snakes in the Coil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just shot a video to it, and I'm doing the rest of it to this week.
That's what's up. Yeah, that's very nice.
But the problem is, I want to get in the video. Is that an old man in the video?
I mean, everybody loves you, Brooks, man. Everybody loves you and respect you, Brooks, man. You've been a pillar in our community for umpteen amount of years, man. I ain't going to say how many, because I don't want to tell how old you is.
I'm old. I've been around.
But we highly appreciate it. We love you, man, for the work you done in our community. You know what I'm saying? And we congratulate you on all the success and keeping up with the youth and with this DMV movement.
Yeah.
Like,
let me say something about Brock. When I was coaching the Metro Bulls, Brock, with all the guys, Brock, they called on 49th all around there, and everybody in the neighborhood knew we were gone for the weekend. We didn't have not one break in. You know who was handling that? The general. That's my man, Fox. The Lincoln Heights Bob. They're my boy. Tell us about your journey, man.
What you say, Brooks?
Tell us about your journey. You know,
man. It's been a hell of a journey. You know, as you witness, you know, we come out of poverty. You know, saying, you know, as you know, poverty breeds crime. So,
yes.
And being respected, we ain't have a whole family. So we looked into the teachers and our adults and our elders to give us guidance. And Brooks, you was one of them individuals who gave us guidance. And I always, you know, loved the way you come up. You old sucker, you old fool. they go Fox. They go to the neighborhood, sniffing basketball seats. You know.
Hey, my friend hates that.
Hey, look, man, we couldn't get enough of Brooks, man. And out of respect, man, and the love that he just showed us, he was always real with us. And if we was wrong, we was wrong. That's why if they was gone for the weekend, I tell the guys in my neighborhood, man, leave their cars alone, man. Nobody better touch their car. And if I find out you touch their car, y'all know what it is.
Oh, man.
And look, and I told her, and Miss, you know, on Facebook, she was saying, oh, nobody wouldn't touch my car. I said, believe me, if it wasn't for us, they would have tore your car inside out. You wouldn't have had nothing but the frame left.
This whoop off. That's my good. Yeah, the wreck. Because I had the pleasure working at the school and the wreck. But tell us about your journey, man, because you've been through a lot. But one thing about you, man, you know, you're a survivor.
It's been a hard, you know, like I said, we come from poverty, man. Poverty breeds crime, and I grew up it's been a product of my environment. You know, so I done 17 years for double homicide when I was young. You know, the guy shot me, killed my brother. I went, you know, You know how that go out.
Yeah.
I retaliated. The case is over with now. It's out there. I was a juvenile when it happened, and I learned from my mistakes. See, even in the Bible,
absolutely,
in every spiritual book of wisdom, it said, as a child, I thought as a child. Now, as a man, I think like a man. And that's the plight that we facing today in society. You know, they're not forgiving us for our past indiscretions and crimes because
you're right. That's
they still
you're right.
Stigmatizing
that's why I want you on the show.
They still stigmatizing us, putting this on our back. And this would re-justification come in, because if I'm not forgiven for something I did 22 years ago, how am I, you know, able to move forward? You see what I'm saying? And I had this problem the other day when I saved a woman's life on a bus.
Yeah, I told Bach about that. We want to hear that. That's what everybody listen to this.
I saved this woman's life on the bus. She had a stroke. You know, I cleared the bus out, told everybody to get back. And this society is so unforgiving, and they so desensitized that they start pulling their cell phones out. I say, man, instead of pulling their cell phone out, somebody give me some help. I told the bus operator, open the door, let me out. She came back, too. She wanted to get up. I said, ma'am, you know, I advise you to stay here till EMT arrive. She wanted to get up, you know, and the rule is you can't hold a woman. I mean, you can't hold nobody against their will. I let her up, stepped off the bus. When she tried to get off the bus, she fainted again. I caught her in my arms, picked her up, took her to the bench, took my jacket off, put my jacket up on her head, and was splashing her with water until the EMT arrived. And the EMT told me, you know, even though they were small actions, but if it wasn't for that, she could have been brain dead.
That's right. Absolutely.
You know? So after that, called my supervisor at the, you know, at the circulating bus where I was, you know, being hired at, being trained at. You know, everybody was, oh, congratulating me. Oh, who is this guy? You know, because I'm just coming on to the scene. They wonder, out of their 9 years of experience, no operator has ever responded the way I did to a medical situation like that.
Yeah.
So they offered me back to the office. I came back to the office. We wrote the incident report up. So I guess they was curious about me. The guy wanted my jacket. When he wanted my jacket, he saw my application that I had. You know, I was honest about it. I had a murder charge when I was 15 years old. So he called me as I was leaving and said, we have a change of schedule. Don't worry about coming in tomorrow. Just come to the safety office. And I said, pertaining to what, sir? He said, I'd rather not speak about it on the telephone. I said, okay.
Don't tell. It's horrible.
I come in the next morning. He said, we're going to have to part ways. I said, why is that? He said, because we don't hire ex-fellas. I said, are you serious? He said, yes. I said, okay, you tell me you've been training me for 3 weeks. You know what I'm saying? Tomorrow is my bus route, and you won't hire me? And after I've done this good deed, he said, it's not me, it's policy. I said, okay, I appreciate you. You know, and I love the atmosphere here. You got some good, you know, employees, but I will be calling Channel 9.
Yeah,
so
but
that's what
this.
I did.
You didn't lie. You didn't lie on the application. That's what people don't realize. You didn't lie.
Well, I mean, what's the purpose of lying? Because I'm not a criminal. See, a criminal is an individual who repeatedly commits the act of a crime. See, I'm not an ignorant Negro.
Thank you, Pop. I love you, boy. Thank you. Tell him.
See, I'm not an ignorant Negro. See, that's where they stigmatize us black men in society as being ignorant, like we don't know our rights. See, Martin Luther King didn't die. You know what I'm saying? Just for us to not exercise our rights. You know what I'm saying? Malcolm X said it best. If you have to stand for someone, you will fall for anything. You know what I'm saying? Even though, I mean, I'm well known in the streets and respected in the streets, that don't mean I can't be intelligent.
Yeah, see, absolutely.
If people do their history, Brutus, which was a bully, was killed by Caesar, which was a thinker. You know?
Thank you.
And you have to be able to think in order to survive in society because your mind controls your body. Everybody thinks about the physical aspect of a human.
Yeah.
So is your mind.
Yeah.
It's your mind. So I wrote a book called Everything I Did Good Was All Bad that I'm trying to get somebody to type up and possibly get it published.
Oh, I can handle that. Get with me. I get somebody to publish it. We had a book. I guarantee you I get somebody to publish. That ain't no problem. They'll do it. They'll do it for you. I think, and it'd be very cheap too.
Yeah,
but,
the book is about explaining the hardships of a black young man growing up, being a product of his environment. Because if I step out the door and see crime every day, that's what I'm reciprocate crime.
That's
on my suit. So when I went in front of the judge and he called me a menace to society, I knew I had something in me when I was young. And even at the age of 15, I said, excuse me, judge, can I say something, please, Your Honor? He said, yeah. I said, how could you call me a menace to society, a terror, when
I didn't have the support system that you had. See, when you walk out your door, you see a garden, you see flowers, you see a doctor, you see a lawyer. When I walk out my door, I see a hustler. I see somebody getting robbed. I see somebody getting jumped, beat up. I see a crackhead. So I'm only a product of my environment. Now, if you would have put me into, it's like a goldfish. He only gonna grow as big as his environment.
Thank you. You understand?
So you can't take me now out of this little small bowl, which means this small thinking environment, and put me in this big old environment and expect me to act normal, and especially if I'm undereducated. I haven't went to – see, you had 20 years of law to study. I ain't have no time to study. You see what I'm saying? But I knew I just had the spirit inside me said it wasn't right. What they doing in the system, it just wasn't right. That's how they cash grade us. They cash grade us by putting us in prison. They kill two birds with one stone. If I kill you, you gone for life, and then I go to jail for life. So they get rid
of
you.
That's right. I said that all the time.
Yeah, that's how they get rid of you, you know? And
yeah.
So I decided when I went to prison, I'm going to do the time. I'm not going to let the time do me. I studied. I read. I learned about business. You know what I'm saying? I followed my dream. I wasn't scared to step out there on faith, because you got to stop being negative and understand that when you step out there, every experience, every situation, you got to look at it as being positive. Even if you fail at something, it's positive because you learn from that. Now you know what not to do and what to do. You see what I'm saying?
You know what? You're absolutely right. And you know what a lot of people don't realize about the federal prisons? D.C. really got it rough because the guards hate them. You know, D.C. is got it rough in the penitentiary. So you trying to fight that stigmatism about I'm from D.C. and you trying to learn, because D.C. really, I mean, hey, it's a rough camp in the prisons.
Who you telling? Everybody.
Yeah.
Dudes don't like D.C. Dudes, but D.C. is very well hated but respected, because they know they're ignorant, for one thing. And ignorant is not a bad word. It just means that you're unaware of something, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
They're ignorant. That means, well, if you do something, they're not going to ask question themselves. They might not going to process it. Oh, why does brother do that? They're going to react. You know what I'm saying? And that's the worst thing you can do in a situation, is react. Emotional response to a situation is the worst thing you can do, because you can take a person's life or do something that you didn't mean to do, and you can't take that back. You see what I'm saying?
You're right.
That's why
I really don't like reality TV.
Yeah,
I don't like it either.
Because that's what they teach them.
Man, I'm going to tell you, reality TV, these TVs, man, it's brainwashed. It's a control. And people don't want to hear it. When you start talking the truth, it's like a foreign language to them. You see what I'm saying? When you start talking about, man, look, I want to own this business, man, because I'm tired of seeing these Koreans. All right, go to the Jew neighborhood. Go to the Korean neighborhood. I bet you don't see no black stores in their neighborhood. But if you come to the black community, you see Ethiopian, you see Jews, or Koreans, Chinese, all up and down our neighborhood. Kaji, what's to say? You know what I'm saying? A man who spends enough money on cigars, which can feed a family, he deserves to die.
You know, my friend tells me that all the time. So I understand. And you're so right, man. You know, let me tell you something. Most of the guys I know that come out and done a lot of time, they're some of the most intelligent people that I know. Because I'm telling you, you have nothing to do but learn. And you come out and I look at you, Bob, you real sharp. The first thing you did when we went to Channel 9, had Bruce Johnson. You know, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. I said, I'm going to have you on the show, and I don't know if you hooked up with Elwood Yango and them, but that crew, you know, they work with people, you know, coming out of prison trying to straighten them up. You know, I'm going to try to help you. You know, I made some calls today. But the thing about it is, man, you out here, man, they let you out. You pay your debt to society, and then – The system is for you to go right back. But see, you're too smart for that. You ain't going for that move again.
No, because I mean, look, I know better. See, when you know better, you do better. You cannot go. You can't play the fence. And even in my music, I talk reality talk. Some people might look at some of that stuff is negative and it's aggressive and what. Nah, this reality, because this was going on right now in my community.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? This is what's happening right now. See, what they didn't expect me to do was follow up on that, because they think, okay, he probably uneducated. He just probably know enough to fill out an application. He only have his GED. He's not going to fight us. That's what they all suspect. But we got rights. That's why I went to the Human Rights Association, and I pleaded my case. I have a lawyer now. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to see law precedes policy. And from me reading the law, I know this. I might not know their law, because law always have two lingos, two languages,
right.
You know. But
right.
Law precedes policy. When he told me, oh, this is not me, Mr. Fox, it's policy. I said, okay, I thank you for the policy. But I would have Channel 9 News up here because D.C. pays y'all, which is I'm a lifelong resident of Washington, D.C. Okay? Now, D.C. also funds WMATA, DDAC, and Project Empowerment, and DOES. These training programs for return citizens, what they now call us, ex-felons, you know, quote me. And, all right? So you're telling me you'll give me a job, D.C. will give me a job but won't hire me? That's an oxymoron.
That's right.
So you saying an ex-felon, I can vote, but I can't work? What type of, nonsense is that? You know what I'm saying?
You can work for the federal government in prison, but when you come out, you can't work for the federal government.
Okay, the government want me to sew their tennis shoes together. They want me to make army fatigue, you know what I'm saying, in a unicorn. They want me to sew book bags together, don't they?
Yeah.
For 20 cents an hour, don't they want me to do that? But when I come to society, I can't be a productive citizen? Come on. That's wrong. That's a violation of human rights right there.
There's no question.
What I'm saying, policy. Okay, if D.C. funding you, I'm a lifelong resident. So this is where the re-justification come in, where my brother is not even paying attention to this. You know what I'm saying? Just because you call your, street nigga is just a term. You see what I'm saying?
Thank you.
That's just a term right there. And if you fall victim to that term, then you're gonna remain ignorant. You know what I'm saying? What my brother's not understanding is this. When D.C. funds a program, right, it's for you to get a job. This is where the re-justification comes in there, right here. All right, D.C. will train you, but I can't work for you. Okay, and as a man who want to be a productive citizen, if he can't find work and right here in D.C., then what he going to do? Go to another state. This is how they get rid of you. All right. Because Merlin hires, they will hire you, you ex-felon. You see what I'm saying? Because they know that's going to keep their economy flourishing.
DC want to get rid of you. Oh, yeah, that's another way of getting rid of you. Okay.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
See what I'm saying? They're going, and 85% of DC is ex-felons. Come on, man. Think about it.
Yeah.
The median income to survive in DC is $119,000. Just to live comfortable in D.C. because the cost of living in D.C. is high.
And let me tell you something. Some of the things I did in my life, I was lucky. I never went to jail. I went to college. But guess what? I tell people all the time, I've done some things that I'd just be getting out of jail for. But guess what? You know, let me ask you this.
Hey, let me say this real quick.
Okay, go
does
ahead.
Does anybody
go ahead.
Have a question for the general? Just press 1 on your dial pad. And we'll get your question in. Thanks.
Okay. Hey, look, let me ask you a question. Now, up Lincoln Heights, you know, first of all, I've always been all right with the guys in the neighborhoods because I go up there. I don't take a lot of people up there, and I go and I kick with everybody. And I tell you right from wrong. But let me ask you a question. When you talk to them youngers in Lincoln Heights, when you talk to them, are they listening to you, some of the young people up there?
They always listen to me because guess what? I make sense.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can be so intelligent you can be dumb. What I mean by that, that means you're throwing big words on the youngins. You try, well, the philosophy is it. No. You got to dumb it down.
Right.
Speaking their language will make sense. You see what
that's
saying?
Right.
It don't make sense. Just like it's like gambling. Just like I tell a youngin on the script. They see me, man, Fox, how you get that band? Fox, how you get that? I said, Shawty, you got to work. That's the new hustle. I said, look at here, Shaw. Now, you out here on the corner. You doing your thing, you dibbing and dabbing, you bleeding the blood. Oh, yeah, you know, I'm getting this money. Man, I said, I didn't think about this. Look at the odds you got away. You know what I'm saying? You're getting tennis shoe money because that's all you're getting. You know what I mean? In order to get, be successful, you damn near got to have a complex because the way the society is set up is not going to allow you to get too much money. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
Not only that, right, I tell the younger, look, you got to worry about. I said, you like to gamble? Oh, yeah, man, I shoot them dice all day. I said, okay. Think about your life as being you gambling your life right now, because this is the odds you got. You got to worry about bad product. That's one, right? Yeah. All right. You got to worry about the robbers.
Yeah, man.
You got to worry about jump outs.
Yeah.
Worry about the police. Somebody call the police.
Yeah.
Got to worry about the shortage.
Yeah, man.
I said, and you got to worry about somebody shooting and killing you.
Well, snitching, then you got to, you know. Yeah.
I ain't even think about that. I said, all four pair of tennis shoes, because that's who you hustling for. You hustling for Nike.
That's right.
You hustling for Jordan.
They're not taking care of
their
family.
His money in private prison.
Yeah. They're not taking care of their family. A lot of people, they take care of their family. They ain't taking care of their family. They get that stuff for themselves.
My main thing is, we was hustling to get out the hood. These dudes hustling to be hood niggas.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't
get it.
Yeah, we got one question for you right here. You are now live with the Hangman. What's your question, sir?
Hello. Am I on?
Hello.
Yeah, this is Dave.
Yeah. What's up, Dave? My man.
How you doing? Mr. Fox, I'm original Laker Heights. You know, from Laker Heights. And
yeah.
I don't know... You know, did you come from another section part of the town and move into Lincoln Heights? Because my name is David Johnson, and I've been known all over Lincoln Heights for years.
He's much younger than you, Dave.
Huh?
Say that again?
He's much younger than you.
Oh, he's much younger than I am?
Much younger.
Yeah, I'm 36. How old are you, bro?
Oh, I'm almost 60 years old.
Okay,
then. Rick, to tell you, they used to have me come down to Kelly Miller on the doors when they used to have dances there. You know, they used to call me Big D, right?
Yeah.
And Brooks can tell you, I used to control the mob, you know, so, and I was a very popular guy around Lincoln Heights back in the day. And I wanted to know, you know, did you come from a different part of the section of the city when they redid Lincoln Heights?
When they started rebuilding Lincoln Heights back in when they did it in '85, remember when the rent office used to be in the circles? They moved us around Capo, right?
Okay.
I've been around Lincoln Heights since '82, since I was young, up to now. But, you know, I left 17 years. I left the streets in '94 and I came home in 2012. I've been gone for a long time, but the mark I left still remains, because, you know, they kept me alive by telling stories of me and my brother, you know what I'm saying, like, and just not only the violence, but the things that we did in our community, because when we was in the streets, I hold your door, take the trash out, make sure your son go to school, don't be on the strip, even though I was young too, you know what I'm saying, we had respect for our elders, you know. So
thank
people
you.
Still remember that. And that's why they treat me the way they do, because I was one of the dudes like, well, let's get a grill out here, get a food stamp card, and let's cook. Anybody can eat. You know what I'm saying? Or Christmas time, say that again.
Dave, he was a good dude, man. He one of my younger days. I mean, he gave his brother. His brother's not to be played with. That's my man.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
you said something about Fox, and I never heard of Fox before, you know.
Hey, David, get off the phone. You're an old man. We're talking about the young people. Talk to you. We got to get ready to go. We got to get ready to go, Dave. You got to get ready to go. Fox.
Yeah.
Fox.
Yeah.
So I noticed that, you know, I'm supposed to be going back to work in June, and a friend of mine told me, say, well, things are going to be different. I said, man, them youngers are the same, if you ask me. I mean, I might not know some of them, but I know somebody that knows somebody. And
yeah,
I'm coming
fathers.
Right back up in Lincoln Heights.
You know they fathers? The grandfathers, the generation right now is just messed up, man. I mean, I just don't see you just think about the Black Panthers. Like, these guys are 16 and 15, 17 years old for the revolution. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm just comparing the decisions of the mind, you know what I'm saying, where we was at during that time.
Yeah,
and, like,
absolutely.
They don't even salute these brothers, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, like, somebody got to stand up and be a pillar in their community by being an example instead of running their mouth all the time. Or these dudes run around. See, I say Lincoln Heights General, but that's not where my mind at because I'm not set tripping. You see what I'm saying? I'm not stuck on D.C. because I've traveled the world and I know the world is bigger than Northeast D.C.
That's
where I had to learn that. When I went to the Fitz, when I was down low, there was a gladiator school, knife fighting and fighting. And when I went to the Fitz, it was a thinking man game. I met some good men, some minds, some intelligent minds in that place right there. And that's what made me respect all men because D.C. got a thing like, oh, we the toughest dudes in the world. D.C. got a thing like we do. Thank you. D.C. got to do that thing that we the toughest dudes in the world, and we come with this complex thing like, oh, you, it's just like L.A., for real, it's just like gangs. Or the Lincoln Heights crew, the Clay Turs, we got our street crew, you know what I'm saying, Newton Street, it's just like gangs.
Yeah.
But and we wonder why the Spaniards, the Mexicans are thriving, because they stick together. You see what I'm saying? It's 2016, the dude's still hollering, Uptown Crew.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would think a wise man, you would think a fool to be a wise man until he opened his mouth.
Absolutely. You know what, you're right. Fox, let me tell you something. Man, you know what? We're going to have him on the show next week again. Because I want to hear some more of this, because this man's got a lot of knowledge. And this is the second time we've ever done this. We want you to come back next week, and we're going to have you on at 8 o'clock. We want to talk to you some more about this because, man, you know, like I said, I always respected you, man, and I never had a problem with Lincoln Heights or Clayton. I never had a problem with anybody want to jump on me because I always respected everybody. I never came with that, I'm this and I'm that. I never did that. And see, I gave everybody respect. I always spoke to everybody. I always give everybody play. I never got big. And the thing about this, I don't care. You know, I'm going back out in the street. But look, if you treat people fair and do the right thing, you'd be all right. I don't care how old you are.
Man, they love you, man. They love you, man. They love you, Brooks. You know what I'm saying? Because your work didn't stop right there in Lincoln Heights. Your work did. Clay Turret, Simple City, East Gate, up and down 49th Street, Athens Place, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, everybody loves you, man. Like, because it's just the way you carry yourself, you know?
Yeah, because man, I'm grown. I'm this and I'm that. I got my yours. I couldn't stand that. When I hear teachers say that, I couldn't stand that. I got it. You got to get yours, you know. And you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The best way to get a troublemaker is when he's not in trouble.
Man, I want to tell you, man, I appreciate you for having me on. It was an honor, you know what I'm saying, sharing my point of view, you know what I'm saying. We really didn't get too in-depth, you know, of everything, but I want. You know, if y'all want to hear some of the music, they can go to SoundCloud, Big Fox, Lincoln Heights General. And like you said, you helped me with getting the book published, everything I did.
Yeah,
it was all bad.
We can talk. And, you know, next Saturday, we want to get him on 8 o'clock, Bob.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, y'all, it's on.
So,
pleasure,
thanks
man.
So much, All right.
But I'm getting on that too. You know, I will get my man Mike Malloy, but we know I got to straighten him out, you know, because that's my man. You know, I love him. But I will get a little bit on too, you know. Big Six.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
All right. I want y'all to be safe tonight, man. I'm going to keep y'all in my prayers, man. And we're going to do this again, all right?
Okay. All right, next week, man. Next week. So clear your calendar, man. I got you next week, 8 o'clock.
All right, thank y'all, man.
All right. All right, thank you. Yeah. All right, Brooks. Well, I just want to give a shout-out to all my folks out there listening. Appreciate y'all. Big love, everybody. And,
best friend, you know, much love. And next week, we're going to have him. And I think we had a great show tonight.
You definitely
Bob, I
did, man.
It.
Talked about a lot. Yeah. And we back at it. Next Saturday, 7:30, 9:30, Everything DMV Radio. Let's Talk Football with the Hangman and Bach. Guests can call in at 929-477-2975. Or you can go online at www.everythingdmv.com/Let's Talk Football.
I want to thank everybody for listening in, and have a good night. And we will continue this.
That's right.